Hello and welcome to episode 3 of series 3 of the Poolside Pass podcast. Today I'm going to be joined by someone who has completed 42 years as head coach of a very successful US college program. 40 of those years he's finished in the top 10 at the NCAAs, 33 of those in the top 3, and he's won 14 national championships. It is, of course, Eddie Reiss. So we're going to be speaking to Eddie pretty much about all things swimming and training and coaching. Before we get into the interview with Eddie, just a quick line from our sponsors, Streamlined. Become a qualified swimming teacher with Streamlined in as little as 6 days. Learn at your own pace and be guided by our expert tutors. You can do your training face-to-face, online in real-time, or a combination of the two. Assessment can be in your club using videos or attending one of our assessment venues. We offer tailored, high-quality support. Quote the Poolside Pass for an extra 10% discount. Okay, so I think it's about time I introduced Eddie. Eddie Reiss, welcome to the Poolside Pass podcast. How you been getting on?
Thanks. I love to do these kind of talks. So I'm sure it'll help both of us.
Awesome. Yeah, I've been really looking forward to this. We had it planned in for last week, but then technology got the better of us, so this week we're trying again. Why don't we just start off with getting like a brief background of kind of your coaching and how you got involved with what is now your whole career.
Is brief the key word here? I've been doing this for a long time. And I don't know whether I've been blessed or cursed with the gene that you never accept anything as being the best it could be. I'm always trying to find ways to get better. And in my mind, that means make it harder for the swimmers. I don't really tell them this, but I was a swimmer majoring in everything at the University of Florida. Majored in engineering, then business, then physical education. And all the swimmers on my college team kept telling me, you need to be a coach, because I was trying to coach them back then. And I went and got my master's, spent a lot of time in a physiology lab, either learning or being the guinea pig. And I loved all of that. So it seemed like I've just found something that I'm a little bit better than average at, and I love it. I love the challenge. I love the fact that it's different for each swimmer, maybe every 6 months, but definitely every year.
Right.
So the same stimuli that you apply to that swimmer to make them, let's say a male, go from 104 to 101.5 100 meter breaststroke won't work the same way next year. So you've got to do a better job. Continue right. To move forward, looking for a better way.
So I guess continue.
I was just going to say that kind of sums it up. I go to a meet and we're halfway through the meet. We're swimming great. We may even be winning the NCAAs. And about middle of Friday, which is halfway through, I'm thinking about what I need to do to improve workouts for next year.
Right.
So if you ever hear, well, you ever take time to enjoy the moment when you win, or put a lot of people on the Olympic team, I'm always trying to find a way to make them better.
Cool. So I think, you know, part of that, you know, you spent an incredible amount of time at University of Texas, kind of building year on year with the group there. You've built a great legacy at Texas with a great team culture. How was that something that was planned in terms of building that culture at Texas? You know, how important was having that team spirit to you? Because when, you know, when you read things about swimmers that have swum for Texas, it's like, of all the things in their life, the most important thing for them is that they've swum for Texas. So how important is that for you?
When I first started, culture was called team chemistry.
Yeah.
Now it's culture, and I think in 10 years, it's going to be how much you really care about the other person. Are you willing to help them, listen to them? And that goes for everybody. We're very good as a team at saying good things to each other during practice. We had a real hard practice yesterday, and one of my juniors was helping one of my freshmen. Freshmen basically killed the set, did a great job. And the junior was complimenting him and encouraging him. Because a lot of times a first-year swimmer will be intimidated and will not cut loose and go fast because they don't want to make anybody feel bad. And you've got to have help overcoming that. You've just got to go ahead. They've got to accept that's who you are, the way you are. But I asked my team to say good things to each other during practice. If somebody's not doing well, that's my job. That's not yours. Because if you're college age, or let's say 15 to 25, someone in your age group can tell you something good. And it does. It is very powerful. But when they say, you got to pick it up, you're not doing well, that's not powerful at all. They blow you off or cuss you out, one of the two. So I don't let them do that. And that's up to me if I deem that that's necessary. But my team on a Friday, 5 o'clock, they go in the locker room, sit around the locker room. They have what they call their clap meeting. No coaches. And each person says something good that they've done in school this week or in practice, or talk as long as they want. Then the team gives them 2 claps. They go through everybody. Then they decide where to go eat together. I would love to say this was my idea, but it was a swimmer from the late 90s, early 2000s. A guy named Nate Dusing made Olympic teams, but those are very powerful. And I would love to be in those meetings. Because I've got good things to say to people. We had a hard workout yesterday. The hardest set was done by the distance swimmers. I talked to them the whole time. And I texted them last night to say again what I said at the pool. what a good job they had done. One of them had, we were doing like repeat 400 meter freestyles. And it was kind of a false word repeat. 400 meter free on, let's say, 410 long course, easy 50 on 120. They had to do six of those. And one guy just went way too fast early and died very badly. And he was feeling bad about that fact. And I just told him, I said, that is the best way to train. Go hard, then try to hang in there. It's also the hardest way to train. Thanks for doing that. If you want them to know something and do something, tell them often. And I mentioned that I talked to him a lot. Yesterday afternoon, I only had one practice yesterday. I walked over 4,000 steps in that practice. I had a breakfast with Wayne Goldsmith years ago. Said the two most important things you know is stay engaged. I've always been good at it, but as all of us, we can get better. And so I've become even better at talking to them. We never allow newspapers on deck. Usually our phones are off, sitting on the bleachers somewhere. And we just, during that 2 hours, we take care of the swimmers. The other thing he said that has really been important in my program, remember that if you run a hard program, Friday and Saturday, they're really tired. You may not have to beat the stew out of them again or work them real hard. So culture is the name of the game. We had a practice the other day where I just wanted them to hold minutes, yards on repeats, 800, 600, 400, 200. I said, just go minutes. And they start out holding 56s on the 800s. Sitting one guy says, everybody, this is the attitude of the team. And the last 200, they're holding 52s. And they always get on me because I never give them a recovery practice. And I point out that it's always their fault that it's not recovery. Because they just race. They go everything hard. I say this kiddingly, and I think it is more true than not. They make me look way better than I am. And I am trying to get better so I can live up to their standards.
Yeah. I think that's a really humble opinion to have. I think a lot of what you just mentioned there came back to kind of motivation and being able to motivate your athletes and your swimmers. I saw a tweet just before we logged on here, and it was like, having a good practice or a good session is one thing, but you want to chain lots of good practices together to make like beads on a necklace. And the longer that necklace gets, the better you're going to race. So what's your kind of, is this just something, because it seems to me like the way you're describing there is those swimmers, you know, very good at chaining those sessions together. Is that something they arrive at your program able to do, or is it something that happens whilst they're at your program?
I would think it's a little bit of both, maybe more for some than for others. that they arrive with that. But I get, everybody asks me to talk about motivation. I claim not to know anything about it. Because I'm a firm believer that when you get into motivation, you know, they say that the reason football teams, American football teams, have trouble on a weekly basis is you can't keep going to the adrenal gland for motivation, even on a weekly basis. So on a daily basis, I don't believe you can motivate them every day. You've got to raise the level that they live at, that they train at in the water, that they train at in the weight room. A lot of that is saying good things to them. Self-image is really important. And the other teammates are important in helping with this, but the coach is the ultimate factor. How do you handle it when they swim a bad race? Well, one, they know they swam a bad race. Usually it's my fault if they swim a bad race because they're not rested or we push weights too far, too hard. Occasionally it's their fault. Like I had some guys swim average for us this past weekend. I took the blame. We were on singles most of the summer and through most of September. I told them, I said, I had no clue where we were. We're good in practice, but is that because we've been going singles and we're rested, or are we really better? So this gave me good insight to where we are. And I'll go through each person and each lane at some time during the day and tell them, go a second or two faster, or you've got to increase your stroke rate a little, or you're going at race pace, go race pace plus 2 seconds. Slow it down some. And, you know, most of us, we've never asked people to do less or to go slower. I mean, it's not in our nature. I'm a firm believer how you treat them on a daily basis. I've sat at a lot of clinics at the banquets and sit with a bunch of young coaches. And they say, how do you make international teams? How do you do this? How do you do that? Key is to get everybody to go faster. And probably the number one requirement in that, you've got to forget yourself. Forget your anger. Forget your, whatever your goals are for you. Just worry about them. The people that do have the best job or do the best job are the ones that worry about taking care of the swimmer. That doesn't mean make it easy for them. I mean, I had my guys that went, we went 6 500s yesterday. They were either on 440 or 450. They got an easy 50 in between. I brought them back today and the middle distance guys did repeat eight, did 4 ones on like 110, then they went right into an 800. Then they went right into 450s at race plus one. Easy 50 on a minute, two or three rounds, depending on who they were. The milers went eight 100s, then a 1500. And they did that two rounds. None of them wanted to do that. I told them I thought coming back after those 500s that I know you're tired. And when you're tired, it's the best time to do aerobic because you've already got lactate in your system. Usually when we train aerobically, we go fast at the end of practice. I'm trying to reverse that and go fast at the beginning, then go long at the end. You got a higher level of lactate at the time, more race-like. Very simply, it's harder. And I'm not going to go to three-hour workouts. We go 2 hours. Some guys go 2:15. You just, in college, can't do three-hour workouts. I don't know if I can think that long.
So I think that the end of that little answer there kind of was a nice little segue into what I want to speak about next, which is how to program like training. There's lots of different ways to plan your season and all that kind of stuff. There's been a lot of discussion about, you know, intensity of training, you know, whether you do, you know, not much volume in terms of yardage or meterage, but you do lots of intensity, or you go the other way around. You do lots of yardage and meterage and little bursts of intensity. Where do you?
Well, that'll be a question we get to argue forever. I'm a cross between old school and new school. About 8 years ago, I took Tuesday and Friday, or maybe Saturday, to do very fast swimming. But it was very fast swimming in a workout concept. It wasn't like a 300 on eight, a 200 on eight, a one, four 100s on eight. We have done that kind of stuff. But this time of year, we do things like 200 swimmers, three 100s off from a push, three 100s on 5 minutes. Swim an easy 200, kick an easy 100. That's about a 6 minute break. Because it takes over 3 minutes to start your lactate clearing. If they can't go faster in this, I put fins on them and they go 25s. If they run out of gas. So after the three ones, we go 475s on 4 minutes. We have the same 6 minute interval or interlude. Then we go 650s on three. And if they've got anything left, I put fins on them, tell them go 25s. This should be a secret. On a minute, that makes me cringe when I say 25s on something slower than 20 seconds. But if you want them to go fast and continue to go fast, you must decrease the distance and increase the relative rest. Then when we come to Friday, sticking with what Wayne Goldsmith said to me, because I listen to two people in the world, Bill Sweetnam and Wayne Goldsmith. They're both geniuses on our sport.
Yeah.
And they help me on a monthly basis. But remembering that Friday they're tired, we don't repeat what we did Tuesday. Some of the guys, and that was 200 and under guys, even sprinters. Sprinters, I may give a minute more rest to each item. Because I don't really have a sprint group. They're the guys, they train for the 300 and we rest for the sprint, for any sprints. But on Fridays, we'll go like 24 50s, one fast on 130, or one fast on a minute, one easy on 2 minutes. And fast needs to be fast. I want them to get tired and keep going. I don't want them, like, if you're going 26 O's long course, and after about six rounds, you're going 28 O's. Well, I'm going to change that person to 25s or 35s long course. Because I'm looking, you know, ever since they started talking about training brain waves and how there's no such thing as muscle memory. So it's all brainwave patterns. That's when I went to those practices are called race stroke rate practices. I want them to, as close as possible, give me a semblance of stroke rate. And once again, I'm learning. I watch this. If it's not effective, the good thing about us, you know, an organization is you guys are part of a big organization. We've got USA Swimming. We've got American Swim Coaches. We've got NCAAs. Sadly, we've got our government. Do not quote me. But if something doesn't work, they just paint it a different color or tilt it a different direction. For us, if something doesn't work, quit doing it.
Yeah.
Even if you're emotionally tied to it and you want it to work because it's your idea. If it's not working, don't do it. Don't try to make something work for yourself. I know I keep hiding myself, but I really look better in a mask. So this is just my reverse mask, and I'm holding this on an iPad, so doing the best I can do. Technologically, I'm a wizard. I've learned to make phone calls on those iPhones and receive phone calls, but I'm limited other than that.
So moving on now, less of the kind of physiological stuff in terms of training, where does like technical development fit into your plans? What are your principles around developing a swimmer's technique when they come into your program, and how do you go about making those changes?
First 3 weeks, spend 4 days on each stroke. Even if you're so bad at that stroke, you will never appear in public in University of Texas equipment swimming that stroke. So there will be no ties to me, but I want you to learn it. At least visually or verbally learn it. So we go over the three or four stroke drills we do for each stroke, how we time breakouts off fly kick, breaststroke pullouts, how breakouts are different off starts, why we like our good fly kickers to go off a flying start instead of a flat start on a relay. I give them everything I can give them. I know they're not going to get it all. But, and this is another thing we do real well. About 20 minutes twice a week, we break up into groups. And this group over here is coached by Jake Foster, who's back to breast turn for the IM, is really good. Jake is coaching back to breast turns. I've got a real good flyer. He's coaching two end turns, which is fly to fly, fly to back, breast to breast, breast to free. And over here, I've got Austin Katz working with the backstrokers, trying to get their hand in perpendicular, either straight behind the shoulder or slightly out to the side. And I have different people teach every time. First semester, juniors and seniors teach. After that, everybody teaches. And the way you learn something best is to teach it. And my guys are really good. I just walk around and troubleshoot. They call me over. I try to fix what I can. But we do that all year. All this stuff about how long it takes to break a habit, 3 to 6 weeks. If your habit, you're not going to break it in 6 weeks. You're going to revert to your, when you get tired or scared in a race, you're going to revert to your strongest habit. So you've got to work on that. I watch technique every day. That's most of my steps. I walk over and work on technique. You've got to, we have so many videos of good strokes. There are some people out there that are just great technicians. Usually it's the fastest people.
Yeah.
Get a video. Look at it. If your swimmer is not doing it right, fix them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not a straight arm freestyle fan. So I teach college. We run a camp also. And the drills we use for that camp, same ones I use in college. For college, for freestyle, I just tell them when your hand comes out of the water, point your fingertips at that lane line to your right. The best freestyle stroke anyone ever makes when they reach for the finish. It is straight in from the shoulder, 3 to 4 inches underwater. No crossover. And the pull, ever since Barcelona and Kieran Perkins, the pull is pointed down at the bottom. Till that time, distance people bent their arm at 90 degrees at the elbow underwater.
Hmm.
Purely a strength thing. Now, everybody's big and strong. They can do the stroke right. So the recovery point at lane line, point at the end of the pool, point at the bottom of the pool. I am now a freestyle coach. That's all it takes. But to give them a drill, and the only way a drill does them good is to do the drill correctly. You have to coach a drill harder than you coach the stroke. Like, how many one-arm butterflies do you see that their hand goes straight up at the sky?
Yeah.
That's not right. And I have mine breathe to the side, but I tell them, just bring it over the top of the lane line. I try to make it as close to the stroke as possible. And backstroke, well, actually our butterfly, my favorite butterfly drill is five kicks, two strokes. And you do that, you can do that forever. And we do. And five kicks are without a breath. Then you take two strokes, you can breathe on both or one. Backstroke. You know how to do spin drill?
Yeah.
It is the best and hardest single drill out there. It makes you do the stroke right. But you got to do it a lot. They don't like it. It's hard. We do it.
About 10 meters of it at one time, right?
There you go. Well, I started doing it in the 70s. I had a team of a bunch of beginner backstrokers. And we did more backstroke spin drill than I do with my guys nowadays. I think that's because my guys nowadays could all beat me up. I created my own destruction, as they like to say. But spin drill is my go-to. And we'll do it if the guys I've got at the level they're at, they're going to get better. They do minimum of 800 in different sets, 3 days a week. You do some one day a week, that works for your 14 and unders. If it's something good to do. If it's good to do, your real good swimmer's got to do it 2 or 3 times a week. Hmm. Or there's, if you look at the brainwave pattern theory again, it's the only way you're going to make it work. My breaststroke drill, we're doing a lot of pulling with fins. Breaststroke pulling with fins. And now, pulling means arms only.
Yeah, yeah.
So you got to watch them. So when your hands go forward, your head goes down, and that's when your breaststroke kick should occur. Mm-hmm. So if you've got fins on, that's when what I call a foot fault occurs. It's just a half a fly kick. Mm-hmm. As your hands go out, your heads go down, your feet go down. It's a balancing act.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually, we did some 400s with that this morning. And the whining factor was way up. And I told him, I said, how do I decide what's good for you? If you don't like it and it's difficult for you, then it's coming back. But if you like it, you may never see it again. Oh, this was easy. This was good. You're not going to get it again.
Yeah. That's good stuff. I like that. So we've spoken about kind of the culture, the motivation, the physiological, and then the technical training. Let's talk now about racing. And one impression I get just from me over here in the UK when I look on American swimming from afar is how often sometimes you guys are racing. Is it important to race, you know, regularly and quite often?
Well, since everybody's caught us long course, I think that's up in the air. to decide that factor.
Yeah.
Like, and I think it's, if you're racing a lot, you got to find a way to get away from competing against your best time. Because if you're fatigued from workouts, you can, if you're a 146 guy, 200 meters free, you may be 153 in my program. All right, what do I tell them? Good swim? That's way better than your mom could have done. I mean, what do I tell them? And you don't want to rest for everything. Find different events for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I'm looking at that. Because this is a year when we're not racing very much.
Yeah.
And it's, for some reason, a lot of my swimmers grew from a half inch to an inch. And I, just through physical maturation, a lot of them got stronger.
Yeah, for sure.
For years, when our nationals were over in the first weekend in August, I used to tell my swimmers, go play tennis, go play basketball, ride a bike. Don't get in the water until you come back to school. Because I wanted them to heal and recover.
Yeah.
And I got away from that. And I'm definitely going to go back to that. When they finish in August, they've got to have some time off.
Yeah,
just
sure.
And I think, I don't understand the meaning of the healing process in this explanation, but I have a feeling they've got to heal. So that's, I think it's up in the air. I do 3 to 4 long course training sessions a week, 5 to 6 short course. You guys go more and you're doing real well. Something to look at.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, you made a real good point about, and I kind of glossed over it, about race pace and volume.
Right.
And I think it's got to be a combination.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've got some 500 swimmers that their other events are the mile. So they do more volume. I've got some 500 swimmers. Their other events are the 200 and the 100. So they do more race pace. If you're running a practice and they're 18 and up, they're all doing the same thing, you are hurting 2 out of your 3 groups. You've got to find a way to differentiate.
Yeah.
And make the workouts different. Not what's convenient to you, what you see there need to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For sure. So when we're looking then, you spoke there about how people are kind of catching the US when you look at long course meters.
Have caught.
Not okay.
Catching. Have caught.
You guys race a lot of short course yards. And like, we don't understand it. Why short course yards? Why are you guys so like, when the guys come over for the ISL, there was something short course meters, and it must have been like a whole new world to them, something short course meters.
It was.
Why short course yards? What's so great about that?
Don't you measure distances in miles over there on your roadway?
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know. Someone came up with a foot and a yard, and college has always been that way. We've had two NCAAs, 92 and 96, that were short meters. Tradition is probably not a good word nowadays, but that's where it is, and that's what we live by.
Yeah.
And remember, in the 70s, 80s, and part of the 90s, you guys started going to short meters because you thought the reason we were good were short yards. You weren't alive then, but some of these guys on this were. But that was part of the where short meters came from, because we were so successful with our college swimmers in short yards.
Mm-hmm.
But as swimmers have evolved, what was good then may not have the same effect, just yeah. like with your swimmers on a six-month basis. This may be a decade basis.
Yeah.
We may have to change it up.
Yeah. It's interesting because it was interesting for those American swimmers that came over to race short course meters at the International Swim League. Like, for them now, some of the biggest events every year when they come to the ISL will be short course meters. So that's going to perhaps form quite a big part of their career going forward.
Well, and I had a number over there, and for some of them it was their second year and they were much better. The ones that was their first year, they were, when you go 50.6 long course fly and you've got a good fly kick underwater, you're a good turner, and you only go 49.8 short course meters, you know, that doesn't convert.
Yeah.
He should have been better. And I think it was exactly what you're talking about.
Because when you race like yards is, when you 25 yards is a lot less than 25 meters. So when you're used to swimming yards, short course, then I imagine when you go and swim meters short course, it's like going from a short course pool to a long course pool, essentially. Like, you've got a lot further to swim.
Well, it's a little longer swimming with the same amount of breath holding.
Yeah.
Because, see, when you go to long course, a lot less breath holding. I would bet if you guys came over from a, let's say you did a 6 weeks long course training period,
mm-hmm.
and you came over and rested a week, swam short course, I would think you'd have trouble holding your breath.
Oh, yeah.
In a meet.
Yeah.
So there's adjustments to be made, and the body's phenomenal. They can make it.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So just one final question for you here, Eddie, before we go on to our little quickfire thing. With Tokyo 2020, 2021, just around the corner now, it's crept up on us again. Have you got any kind of predictions of who's going to go well at meet?
Well, I watch other countries, and in the past, if let's say you got good at the 100, then they would start training that guy for the 100.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a firm believer that none of us know how to train anybody for 100. You just do less.
Yeah.
And what did I have? I had a 47.6, 47.8, 48-0, 48-2, 48-5 two summers ago. And none of them are sprinters. I mean, they pretty much all of them, the worst one went 150 in the 2-3. So three of them went 46 and 45. So I think you can get focused, and I think you can fail to move that swimmer along to a faster time if you just start training for the 100 or the 200. My philosophy over here, if you're going to be good at the 200 long course, swim the 500 short course. If you're going to be good at the 200, the 100 long course, got to swim a good 200 short course. That's where I live.
Cool. So have you got anyone on your team that you think could potentially go to Tokyo and do something big out there?
Yes. I'm not going to put
this on. You're not going to tell me though.
No names. But yeah, I've always got 200 freestylers. And they are getting better. And that's the name of the game. Mm-hmm. You get better every year. You catch and pass people. That's my only measuring stick. I don't, just like I was telling you, in the middle of an NCAAs, we're winning the meet. I'm trying to figure out how to get better next year. Because I do not like it. Even if they win, they don't go faster.
Yeah.
So I've got a lot of good 200 freestylers. Got good IMers. I've got good breaststrokers. My 50 men are 100 men. Best way to say it. We probably never rest right for the 50. Got good backstrokers, good flyers. I've got a flyer that's going to surprise. He is very good in the 500 free, and he's an average turner. So, and he is, if we do repeat 200s freestyle, he'll do them fly. Got a beautiful stroke. He breathes every stroke almost as well as Michael Phelps, maybe with less effort. I still try to get him to put his head down once a lap. If you're a 100-meter flyer on my team, you breathe one down, one up.
Yeah.
That was when Joseph Schooling went from 51.8, 50.3. He worked hard, but that was his big change. One down, one up. We all know that if you race a 25 butterfly, all your flyers would put their head down.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because they're faster.
Yeah.
So in theory, the more they can put their head down without it killing them, the faster they're going to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Do more of what makes you fast. I think that's going to be a good rule going forward. So we always ask guests for like a little bit of a quick fire thing to finish off. So I'm going to ask you, Eddie, for your kind of top three tips for longevity in coaching. So making sure you're staying in it for a long time and getting better every time. So your top three tips for longevity in coaching.
Realize you don't know it all and you're not as good at it as you want to be. Stay fit yourself. you're around fit people, let them help you stay fit.
Yeah.
And don't be afraid to call someone. I watch meets all around the country. And if a team all of a sudden has a good meet, let's say 18 and unders, I call the coach and ask him, what have you done different this year? What do you think helped you get up to the next level? I probably make 8 to 10 of those calls a year.
Yeah.
And just don't be satisfied where you are. No matter what credits, applause, appreciations, anything. I love these because your questions make me think. And that's real important.
Cool.
You remind me, you make me think of things that I may have left out, that have, we all leave out things and hear them again. It's like an awakening.
Yeah.
But we had them in our repertoire and we need to go back to them.
Yeah. Well, I'm really glad you got something out of this podcast, because you know, I've certainly got a lot out of it, and I know the listeners who have been listening are definitely going to take a lot away from this. So thank you so much for your time, Eddie. It's been great speaking to you.
All right. Thank you, guys.
And
if I can ever help or do it again, let me know.
Oh, definitely. We'll do. We'll do.
Thanks,
just want to thank the listeners as well for tuning in and listening to this episode. Hopefully you took as much away from it as I did. Make sure you share this episode with other coaches that you know in your network. We're on social media, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, all at The Poolside Pass. And don't forget to check out our website, www.thepoolsidepass.com. Until next time, take care.